A weekly conversation where we try to unjumble an important and sometimes under-the-radar statewide story that affects you. I'm Shayna Roth. We're talking cars this week. Michigan lawmakers are concerned about Chinese autonomous vehicle testing in the United States. Here with me to break it all down is Washington correspondent for the Detroit News, Riley Beggin. Riley, welcome back to Mishmash.
Hello, so happy to be here.
Riley, you had a piece this week about this AV testing concern. What stirred this up in Washington?
I mean, there are a lot of pieces to this, actually. It's concern over China in general is sort of like the main area in which, you know, people are seeing eye to eye here, actually. It's this rare space where Democrats and Republicans agree. And so there's a lot of concern over China stealing trade secrets and other sort of competitive and national security concerns. This is aligning with an interest in the auto industry of ramping up autonomous vehicle production. And a lot of cars that, you know, regular people drive, not even completely driverless cars, have some technology that helps them, that's sort of semi-autonomous is what we call it. Like, you know, if you have lane keeping or any sort of assistance that helps you drive, even though you have to pay attention, that's also a low level of autonomy. So some of the technology that automakers use in those vehicles, like cameras and LiDAR, have a sort of a surveillance element to them. So they can help you, they can see the road, they can see what's in front of you. So these two things have sort of combined and raised concerns for policymakers and saying, could China be using that technology to essentially spy on us?
There's a couple concerns. You touched on one of the big ones, which is sort of this national security piece of it, which we'll dig into deeper in just a minute. But these concerns were raised by Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, a Democrat, and Congressman Tim Walberg, a Republican in Washington, both from Michigan. One of those big concerns that they had was also this competition part of it with China. Can you explain that more?
In the United States, we have a really sort of deregulated system, actually, for autonomous vehicles. It's the way that DOT, and a DOT official put it to me recently, was unless it is explicitly not allowed, it is allowed, compared to in Europe, where they have to explicitly allow something. So in the United States, we don't have a lot of rules about who can operate and where and how. California is actually sort of the most regulated state here. They have a program in which car companies have to be licensed to test autonomous vehicles on their roads. So that's basically how we know that there's at least 7 Chinese automakers that are operating autonomous vehicles in the United States because they're testing in California. This is a roundabout way of saying that in the United States, Chinese automakers can operate. In China, U.S. automakers have a lot more restrictions. The government has a bit of a stronger hand that prevents them from testing and deploying vehicles there. So they also were saying, okay, China's ramping up their focus on this, and they are intentionally cutting out other foreign automakers. So we should kind of do the same thing here.
And you touched on this national security piece of all of this that was raised. Can you talk us through more of that and what specifically the U.S. is concerned about with China and national security?
It's a big topic. I mean, China has been mostly an economic competitor for the United States over the last several decades. We've had a pretty open trade relationship with them, but recently there have been a lot more revelations about Chinese companies stealing intellectual property and using basically American innovation to advance economic interests in China. The place where this is becoming a little bit more of a national security concern has to do a lot with conflicts in like around Taiwan. China believes that Taiwan is a, you know, territory of China. And the Taiwanese believe that they are an independent country. The United States has a very intentional policy of not really taking one side or the other. But China has recently been ramping up military drills and sort of signaling that they plan to invade Taiwan and use force to bring them back into their sphere. So the United States is trying to figure out, I think, from a national security standpoint, what their role is militarily there. But then also, these are two different political systems. The Chinese government is communist. The United States, its long history and relationship with communism and capitalism. So I think they also see that as a potential geopolitical rival that could have military aspects. So they're kind of trying to keep this information secret as much as they can to make sure that they have a strategic advantage, or at least not a disadvantage if, things were to flare up in any of these many potential issues.
This was all part of a bipartisan, quote unquote, warning from lawmakers. Do you think that given Republicans and Democrats are concerned about this, that we'll see more action on this? What's the forecast on this issue?
Yeah, potentially. I know there has been, even beyond this Wahlberg-Dingell letter, has been interest from both parties in trying to combat Chinese companies deploying AVs here. So there certainly is a potential here. The unfortunate and overarching backdrop of what's happening in Congress right now is that the margins are so thin that anything that gets done on a bipartisan basis takes just an enormous amount of political pressure. And often, if there is something that is relatively bipartisan, like last year there was, or maybe even 2 years ago now, CHIPS funding, there's a lot of interest, for example, in like putting extra things into it to get it through. And then that ends up bogging it down. And on top of that, we have this sort of ticking time bomb of what is possible before the elections. So going into next year, there's sort of this wide acknowledgement that basically after this year, there's not a lot that's going to get done. So it's certainly possible that there will be movement on this, but there's a lot of things that could happen that would stop it too.
New from the Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
Catch us up on the overall state of self-driving vehicles right now. How's Michigan faring in this area, and is it evolving as quickly as supporters have hoped?
Michigan, given its automotive history, is definitely one of the national leaders in testing AVs and in AV technology. We actually have a lot of research and development facilities in Michigan that are a part of sort of working on cutting-edge technology. That said, a lot of the places where you're seeing like actual testing on the roads are, San Francisco, Austin, Texas, Phoenix, Arizona, these places that have made it they've sort of intentionally regulated autonomous vehicles and made it easy for them to deploy there. But in terms of the speed, it's funny that you asked that, because I feel like depending on who you ask at any given day, people are like, oh, this is happening quickly, or it's not happening quickly enough. We are at this point, I think, pretty far from a world in which you can just buy a fully self-driving car, or that you might even expect to get a self-driving taxi, pick you up and drop you off somewhere else. We may be a lot closer to getting your Amazon packages dropped off to you via autonomous vehicle. But one place where we are, we're really advanced, just like in the United States in general right now, is you are seeing a lot of that lower level autonomy. GM's Super Cruise, Ford is a similar technology that are in these newer vehicles that really facilitate hands-free driving, but you have to be paying attention. You can't take a nap or play a video game or something like that. So it's sort of that middle ground.
Let's switch over to vehicle emissions. 95 members of Congress have asked the EPA to implement the, quote, strongest feasible emission standards. Who are these lawmakers and what started this?
This is a huge fault line in Congress right now on this beat. And actually, once, so the EPA announced these emissions rules, that their proposal is this, like, if they implemented the proposal that they have suggested, that would be the strongest emissions rules in the history of the United States. And they estimated that it would push EV sales to 67%, I believe, by 2035. And that just sparked huge backlash in Congress, primarily among Republicans, who are worried that it would essentially, it would push the auto industry so far to EVs that it equates to a de facto mandate, that consumers will have fewer choices, and that cars are already expensive. And because EVs are more expensive than gas-powered cars, consumers will be left with fewer choices that are more expensive than the options they have now. This letter from Democrats asking EPA to go further was an interesting thing to sort of counterbalance that. They're saying the rule that you proposed, you know, is great, but you really should go as far as you possibly can, that we are on track to miss the goal of stopping climate change at 1.5 degrees Celsius. And that's the threshold at which we're going to see some really awful stuff happening in our climate. So go as far as you possibly can. And automakers are ready. As you might expect, like, environmentalists are definitely in the camp of, you know, go as strong as you possibly can. And, you know, oil and gas is unsurprisingly in the camp of, like, please don't do this. And then in the middle, you know, there are, like, consumer advocacy groups, like Consumer Reports, who does a lot of research on this. They are supportive of the EPA rules. They say that the market basically can support EV adoption at this rate, that automakers can do it, and that EVs will be cheaper over the course of their lifetimes than a gas-powered car. And that, you know, if we ramp up production of EVs, there will be more options, which could drop down the price. The automakers themselves have a powerful lobbying group here in Washington, and they have come out pretty strongly against these rules. They have said that, you know, they're supportive of electrification. They are, you know, pretty independently, even before the Biden administration came in and put a lot of money into this, turning over their fleets to become EVs. You know, GM is going all electric in the next several years, for example. So they're definitely on that path. They're putting a lot of their money there, but they're saying, this is too fast. And if you push us this quickly, we will essentially choose to work with Chinese supply chains to be able to build these EVs, because we have no other choice. These supply chains right now are dominated by China. And if we have to do this quickly, we have no time to build up the supply chain that we would need for these. So that's been their major point, but it'll be interesting to see how it shakes out. Public comment period is over, but you know, EPA can kind of do this whenever they want.
Yeah. Put this into, I guess, a little bit more perspective for listeners in terms of our rapidly heating planet. I mean, experts have been telling us that we are really at a breaking point, and this very hot summer is likely to be our coolest from here on out. How big of a role do vehicle emissions actually play in how we're destroying our planet?
They're huge. In the United States, transportation is the largest producer of greenhouse gas emissions. That's one of my, like, fun party facts, because how fun I am.
I'd still go to a party with you.
Thank you. A lot of people believe that it's manufacturing or industry or something like that, but it actually is transportation. I mean, that includes, you know, heavy trucking and the shipping that happens on our roads, but passenger, light passenger vehicles, the cars that we drive, are a huge, huge portion of that. So, you know, cutting emissions from vehicles is a big way to cut down on our individual footprint. And we've known that for a while. I mean, that's part of the reason why there's been regulation since the 1970s pushing automakers to create more fuel efficient vehicles. And now we're at this stage where, you know, we're in the middle of a big transformation to cut gas altogether.
Shifting gears away from cars, Democratic U.S. Representatives Dan Kildee of Flint Township and Hillary Scholten of Grand Rapids are actually launching a task force to advance legislation combating child labor. What is going on here? And is there something that happened that called for this sort of heightened response to child labor?
In February of this year, I believe, there was a New York Times investigation that came out and showed really pervasive use of child labor in factory settings, in agriculture, in packaging plants. And primarily, these are migrant children, children who came across the border. And, you know, as their parents went through immigration processing, or maybe their parents didn't come with them at all, they were sent to live with family members or with, you know, foster homes, people who can help them survive in the United States while, you know, they wait. And what this Times investigation found was there are a lot of cracks in that system that don't really create the supports needed to make sure that these children have stable lives. So a lot of them ended up in these working environments, you know, to send money back to their family, or some of them were forced to pay their foster family. And there's just not a lot of accountability here, it sounded like. And there's been a rise in child labor. That's what the Department of Labor found after this investigation. So this sparked a huge response. And the reason that Michigan members are really the forefront of this is that this investigation centered on Grand Rapids, Michigan. A lot of the companies that they highlighted are in West Michigan. So there was the automotive supplier ABC Technologies, which supplied Ford and GM, and then Hearthside Foods, which was a supplier for General Mills. So Hillary Scholten is the representative from Grand Rapids. Dan Kildee has a lot of manufacturing presence in his district as well. So they've been on the forefront of this. Both of them have introduced bills to raise the fine that companies pay for violating child labor laws. It sounds like the current fine is just over $15,000, which experts have said is really not enough to prevent companies from doing that. I mean, for a major corporation, that's not a lot of money. So they're proposing to up that, and they're going to work on other legislation and do education-related things to try to fix this.
Finally, former President Donald Trump was recently endorsed by all six Michigan Republican representatives in Congress. Has Michigan been the only state where there has been unanimous support by Republicans for the former president? And I guess, what is their reasoning for standing by Trump?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't know if Michigan is the only state where all of the Republicans have endorsed Trump. But I think it was certainly surprising, given we are pretty far away from the primary, and there are a lot of contenders in the GOP race right now. Most notably, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis is sort of the leading opponent to Trump. And you hear a lot of Republicans in Congress, but also in the Michigan State House, basically saying, we're going to wait and see what happens here, because DeSantis still has an opportunity to sort of ramp up. But I think what this says is it's really evidence of the grassroots support for Trump. These members clearly must be hearing from constituents and hearing from people that are going to be voting in their primaries and saying, you know, we want Trump. The reasons that they gave were largely sort of avoided that, you know, focused more on frustrations with the Biden administration and, you know, alignment with the former president's policies. I will say I talked to Representative John James, who was a surprising addition to this list because he is in a very competitive district. I think a lot of us were like, wow, him coming out this early really says something. So I asked him about that a little bit. And at the end, I mean, another thing to note is in December, the president, you know, I honestly forget the context of this, so I could look it up if I needed to, but the president said that, you know, we could basically consider terminating the Constitution, which was the sort of thing that a lot of Republicans, you know, really didn't like. So Congressman James said at the time that, I guess at that point, Congressman-elect James, you know, said that he was unfit for office. So I asked him what changed. And he basically said the Biden administration has continued to be really bad, and that's what changed. And then, you know, he also said, this gives us time to focus on policy rather than politics, which I think speaks to that, you know, grassroots thing I mentioned, that, you know, they must be getting questions about it and they don't want to have to answer it anymore.
Riley Beggin is a Washington correspondent for the Detroit News. Riley, it's always such a pleasure to have you here on Mishmash.
Thank you so much for having me.
Mishmash is produced by WDET, Detroit's NPR station. This episode was produced by myself, Shayna Roth, and the man, the myth, the legend, Hearns Laguerre Jr. Our news director is Jerome Vaughn, and our podcast manager is David Lyons. Our digital team is Dave Kim and Sophia Joswiak, with additional help from Jack Philbrandt. As always, if you listen to this podcast and you want to support it, you can do so. Just go online and leave us a review. Or if you really, really like this podcast, and we really hope you do, you can support WDET by going to WDET.org/give. Again, that's WDET.org/give. Without your support, programs like Mishmash are really not possible. Thanks again for listening. We'll talk to you next week.